Thank you for that introduction, Patrick. Teddy Jr., Karen, Caroline, Vicky, it's a great honor to be asked to speak here today. There are many others in the audience and behind me who deserve this honor more than I do. And to Joan and to Jean, the whole Kennedy family, my sister Valerie and I are truly honored to be here. You know, there are scores of stories that we could all tell. My guess is every one of you in the audience has a story about Ted Kennedy's generosity and friendship toward you, stories that made a difference in your lives. But truth is, Patrick, it's doubtful that I would be that I would have won my election in the first instance were it not for your fact that your father, literally with less than a week left to go, came to Wilmington, Delaware, rallied about 2,000 Democrats, and started off by saying, "You know, I'm here for Joe Biden, but I think he's too young to be a senator." Everyone in the audience understood it. It energized them. I was then 29. I didn't turn 30 till after Election Day. But the next day in the Wall Street Journal, on that column on the left side, it said, "Kennedy says Biden too young for Senate." That just energized my base, and I won by a landslide of 3,100 votes. But on a more serious note, it's close to certain that I would have never been sworn in as a United States senator but for your father, your father's encouragement, literally reaching out to me and pulling me to Washington. As a matter of fact, I was supposed to go down to be sworn in. I didn't want to, and I didn't show up the day I was to be sworn in. It was your father who, along with Mike Mansfield, sent the Secretary of the Senate to a hospital in Wilmington, Delaware, to swear me in with my boys. After I arrived in Washington, your dad, although it's presumptuous to say this, treated me like a little brother. At least that's how I felt. When I arrived in Washington, after everyone else had been sworn in, your dad became my tutor and my guide. He introduced me to other senators who I'd never met. I'm the first United States senator other than him I ever knew. And so it was new. And I remember him taking me into the Senate gymnasium and all these very famous, famous senators. He was trying to get me out of my office, get me engaged. And I remember walking in the Senate chamber, in the Senate gym, like in a YMCA, the men walk around between the shower and the stalls with nothing on. And I remember walking in and say, "Joe, I'd like you to meet Jack Javits." And I remember going, "How are you?" "I swear to God. Why don't you meet Jennings Randolph?" "Okay." I was like, I felt guilty I was fully clothed. That's a true story. Oh, God, was I embarrassed. And your dad also intervened and got me placed on important committees usually not available to freshman senators. He not only looked out for me, but he looked out for my sons, Beau and Hunt. I remember, I don't know how many times he probably dragged you guys to the Kennedy Center, let me sit in the box next to you with my two sons, and you guys are wondering, what in the hell are we doing here? But you were always reaching out to my sons and later my wife, Jill, and my daughter, Ashley. It's something about Teddy Kennedy. It's something about the Kennedys. But you all know it. Everyone in here understands it. He was an anchor to many of us in our personal lives, but he's also the anchor in an institution that we revered. We shared a lot of perspectives on the world and our place in it, but one that was written on our sleeves was we both viewed serving in the United States Senate is the single greatest honor and the greatest responsibility we had in our lives next to being fathers and husbands. We both believed, and I still believe, that our democracy would not have survived as it has over the past 226 years, but for the brilliance and foresight of our founders, students of Montesquieu and Locke, who understood that the separation of powers among the three branches of the government was the only and ultimate guarantor of individual liberty. As a U.S. senator, a chairman of the Judiciary Committee, a chairman of the Foreign Relations Committee, now as vice president, I've lived that wisdom from a very unique perspective, and with Teddy as my guide. In the Senate, we worked with eight presidents of both parties. I watched him challenge them when he thought they were wrong, while always paying deference to the office they occupied, never demeaning it. I served with him 32 years on the Judiciary Committee, sitting next to him, watched him fight tooth and nail for equal justice for all, but always, always with a deep belief in the indispensability and independence of the role of the judiciary, the only sure guarantee of our justice. But what he really taught me was the meaning of John Adams's observation that the Senate was the colossus, in Adams's words, the colossus of the Constitution. Adams said, no republic can ever be for any duration without a Senate. And a Senate deeply and strongly rooted, strong enough to bear up against all popular storms and passions. I think he believed that with every fiber in his being. I had a front row seat, which I can never repay the family for 36 years of his nearly 50 years in the Senate, watching the liberal line of the Senate. Watching with a never-ending sense of awe, including the last time he walked on the floor of the Senate to cast a vote for the health care bill, the Affordable Care Act. And as divided as the body was on that act, every single senator stood with thunderous applause and tears in their eyes, welcoming back the line of the Senate, knowing his passion from the day he entered that body was to see to it that we no longer debated whether or not health care was a privilege or a right. He debated I watched him, as John said, debate and contest some of the most divisive and important storms and passions of our time. The Voting Rights Act, the Equal Rights Amendment, Watergate, the wars in Vietnam and Iraq, the worthiness of Supreme Court nominees to serve in a body that he fully understood and told us all would have more impact and effect on the fate of the nation than anything we did other than declaring war. And what I observed in every instance was that as passionate as he felt, he always paid deference and respect to the institutions that were involved, whether it was the presidency, the federal judiciary, or the Congress. And the other observation that all those present here who serve with him can attest to, Teddy understood that to unlock the potential of the United States Senate, to enable it to arrive at consensus, was about more than just mastering the details of the issue of the day, and he did master them. He understood that consensus was arrived at from the cumulative effect — I emphasize the cumulative effect — of personal relationships, the little things that you did for the other, built over time. That's what generated the trust and the mutual respect and the comedy that only Teddy was able to do. Forgive me for saying in the city of Tip O'Neill, but I think he was wrong that all politics is local. All politics is personal. All politics is personal. And no one in my life understood that better than Ted Kennedy. I remember vividly as a young senator, we still had a lot of the old anti-civil rights members of the South, 9 to be exact, when I arrived. And Teddy was their nemesis. I remember him debating Senator Jim Eastland of the Judiciary Committee, a powerful anti-civil rights chairman of the Judiciary Committee, or Barry Goldwater on the war in Vietnam, or John McCain on issues of foreign policy and others. 3 very different men with very different perspectives. But when the debate was over, as John referenced, Teddy would inevitably walk across the aisle to his colleague's desk, shake his hand, and more often than not, they'd go down to the Senate dining room to get a cup of coffee together. He reached out to everyone, always, always building and maintaining personal relationships and trust, even those with whom he had profound, profound disagreements. Teddy didn't have to be taught the lesson that the majority leader, Mike Mansfield, taught me once when I criticized the senator in his office. He looked at me and he said, "Joe, it's always appropriate to challenge another senator's judgment. It's never appropriate to challenge their motive because you don't know what their motive is." That's why Teddy was able to so frequently forge compromise and generate consensus, and in the process, help make the United States Senate work as it was designed to work. He believed what he said, that being a United States senator changes a person. It's bigger than you. And it requires you to always be willing to listen to another perspective and to be open to changing your mind without betraying any of your principles. As my dad would say, Teddy was a big man. He was never small. He was always gracious. And as a consequence, he raised everybody's game. It's hard to be petty when the man or woman you're debating is being grand and magnanimous. Reminds me of the quote my sister always uses, attributed to Michelangelo, who was a sculptor at heart. He said, Michelangelo allegedly said, "I saw the angel in the marble, and I carved until I set him free." Teddy set free a lot of folks. He appealed to their better angels. That was Teddy. He set a really high bar for his fellow senators, like the former and current ones who are here today. And one he demanded no less be applied to himself and his staff. Teddy was always optimistic, at least all the time I was ever with him, and that was an awful lot. Always hopeful. Because I believe, like too few people today, he believed in the basic instincts and capacities and goodness of the American people, if just given half a chance. He believed that if you listened to the other guy, the other woman, if you actually listened, you might sign something about their argument that made sense, that anything was possible. Ultimately, from my perspective, I think that's Teddy's true legacy. Measured as a consequence of how we look at one another, and in turn, how we look at ourselves, to establish trust and faith in an institution with the potential to make us all better. And that's what I expect the Edward M. Kennedy Institute of the United States to fully convey to the future generations of Americans who are going to wander through this magnificent place. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm not stating anything you don't already know. This country hungers for a resurgence of a baseline belief in a system of self-governance admired for its wisdom in the face of passionate differences, and for the ability to compromise seemingly unbridgeable divides with some dignity and some dispatch. And I'm confident that this institute will serve and satisfy that appetite. The pundits say that we're divided today. We're more divided than we ever were. Well, that's simply not true. Look at every major poll. On every major issue, there's a consensus in America. It's the political process that has been broken. And generations of Americans from every state will enter this institute with the chance to debate and raise real issues and develop the capacity to speak up and make their case. But I hope they'll learn, always with respect. And hopefully they'll return home empowered with the capacity to listen to different views, to be able to forge a consensus that makes it possible for their community and their country to function to its fullest potential. What more fitting tribute to Senator Edward M. Kennedy than that lesson, to be not only learned but felt by so many generations of young women and men who will walk through this institute. As I said, he was the anchor of our personal lives, and he was an anchor for the Senate as an institution. Let this place serve as a true compass pointing toward his unyielding faith in the limitless possibilities of the American people and this country. Thank you for allowing me to be here. May God bless you all. May God protect our troops.